أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Respected viewers, assalamu alaikum and welcome to this week's show where we'll be talking about domestic violence. Statistics show that one in four women experience abuse in their life, with 750,000 children having witnessed domestic violence in their life too. And the bigger question then is, what effect does that witnessing then have on children? Domestic violence happens across the board, and therefore it happens irrespective of belief, class, culture, and ethnic group. Men are said to also be affected by this. However, it is a crime that is gender-based. It is generally, it is overwhelmingly found in statistics that it is a crime that happens against women. And this is a subject that is relevant to Muslim women's lives. Why? Because when you want to talk about it publicly, sometimes it is associated with shame, and therefore it holds us back from discussing it. So today we'll be discussing domestic violence, and we will be doing so with our two guests today. My first guest is Sister Farzana Hirji, who is a learning and disabilities nurse and is a generic social worker. She has worked with people with learning difficulties and mental health. My second guest is Sister Yasmin Mirza, who is a qualified journalist. She's worked in the Middle East for a number of years, managing women's lifestyle magazines. And she returned to the UK in 2009 and went on to manage the popular Muslim lifestyle magazine, ML. So, assalamu alaikum and welcome to this week's show.
Alaikum salam.
So, without further ado, if we can jump straight in, and if you could, Farzana, define for us, what is domestic violence?
Domestic violence is where one person in an intimate relationship has a level of power which they have somehow achieved over the other person, who becomes a victim. And it really depends. Domestic violence is different in different situations, depending on how the person has managed to achieve their power and how they've managed to victimize the victim. So it's quite a broad.
And are there any examples of domestic?
There are cases where a man is aggressive towards his wife or a partner, and they could even put them down educationally and emotionally, say that, you know, you're emotionally, not worthy of whatever. It really depends on the circumstance.
It's definitely not just physical. It can be more than physical then?
I think domestic violence can be defined probably in three different categories. One is the mental abuse that you get. The second is probably emotional abuse. And the third is the most obvious, which is physical abuse. So domestic violence can sort of, incorporate all three of those aspects. And the level of abuse is probably what determines the severity of the situation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how does this fit with the Muslim ideology of abuse? Does abuse in a relationship exist? Are there anything to say that, you know, a husband does have rights, a husband doesn't? Does, for example, rape exist in a marital relationship?
I think, first of all, if you're both honouring Islam in its true essence, then there will be no abuse, really, because if you're both understanding your roles as a husband and a wife and your rights, and you're both aware of each other's rights, then that marriage will be abuse free. Mm-hmm. It will be based on mutual respect and honor. So the first problem is, you know, actually following your religion properly, reading and acquiring knowledge on what your rights are as a husband over your wife, mm-hmm. and as a woman, knowing what your rights are over your husband, and also fulfilling your marital duties to one another in every aspect, whether it's, you know, your home, day-to-day living, or whether it's, you know, your religious obligations to each other. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if you're not doing that, then all kinds of problems will exist, and you will find in Muslim marriages, so to speak, the issue of possibly rape, where, you know, the husband thinks he has a right over the woman physically, mm-hmm. therefore he demands what he wants when he wants.
And Farzana, in your work as a social worker, I mean, domestic violent cases are on the rise, and especially in the Muslim community, you see it being mentioned in the papers a lot. Is this through a lack of understanding of Islam, or is it more, you know, I am the man and therefore I wear the trousers in the relationship?
I think it's culture. I think it's every it's not so much religion, but there are many cultures within the Muslim religion. Mm. And it's the cultures that I think are bringing this up from obviously, like you said, men wearing the trousers from ancestors, you know, people following what their parents have done, and then taking on what they're seeing in society right now.
Yeah.
So what is acceptable and what is not acceptable? You're saying that domestic violence is on the increase. I mean, I understand that, but we look at it. I mean, the statistics aren't very clear, to be honest, because it really depends on what's happening in the world at the time. If suddenly there's been a case that's, you know, quite high profile and come out, it might empower women or whoever the victim is, male or female, to come out and speak, and obviously that gets recorded as a statistic. There may be times where people don't report things for a while, so, you know, there might be domestic violence happening and we don't always know. And there are also times where people are going through stress, families are going through stress, like recession, and that stress is then, in a sense, you know, it
manifests
itself. Yeah, it manifests itself within the family, and that's when issues start to begin. And in a sense, that's the start of domestic violence, and it becomes a kind of rolling ball, to be honest.
And Merv, if I could just come back to you. I mean, alhamdulillah, you're happily married now, but you did go through a marriage that where you did experience domestic violence. Can you share some of the reasons potentially why and what you went through with that?
Well, I think at the time I didn't realise how sort of oppressive that marriage was, in the sense that it was very subtle abuse to begin with. It was very much mental abuse, sort of psychological, to the point where, you know, I was doubting my own sort of judgment on things. It was quite an intense situation, so I think it would require more than one show to elaborate, but, you know, obviously it started off with very much mental abuse, and then it progressed onto verbal abuse, where, you know, I was shouted at for something that wasn't my fault, or I was being told I was stupid and incompetent at things which I'd always done and I knew I could do them. But it was very strange, because to the outside world it wasn't that evident, but behind closed doors it was quite, you know, abusive, and swearing, and, you know, being called I'm effing this and effing that, and it was quite sad. Then it progressed onto physical on probably two or three occasions. One was very public, in central London on Oxford Street, in front of my four-year-old daughter. At the time she was four, and that was quite bad. That was the first time it was actually quite sort of, you know, obvious. And it was in front of loads of people, so although I had the opportunity to take the matter further, I didn't, because I felt maybe he will change, maybe he will realize his mistake, you know, he'll but it didn't get better. I think what happened was it just made him stronger, and he thought, well, I've got away with it this time, I can get away with it again. So yeah, it happened at three occasions physically, but the mental and the emotional, I think, was as bad as the physical, if not worse.
And are you then left trying to manage your emotions and your daughter's, because you said your daughter's witnessed the one that was quite public?
She actually had nightmares for a long time after it happened, and, you know, she was really scared. And, you know, she's going to be 13 now, and she still remembers it quite clearly. It's very vivid in her memory. So it's quite sad that she has to live with that memory, I think. But at the same time, I think, alhamdulillah, it kind of made her realise what I went through. And, you know, people drive you to certain things which may not be within your character, and they turn you into a person that you know you're not. So with me, I was turning to somebody that I was not, because I didn't know how to deal with that situation and how to get out of it, because I was scared what people would think. I was scared to confront the reality of the situation. I think I was in denial for a long time, because when you get married, you want utopia, you want everything to be perfect, you know, it's forever, till death do us part, and it's meant to be forever. And to first realize that, oh my goodness, this is actually not what I thought it would be, it's difficult to deal with that within your mind.
Prasanna, is this typical? I mean, we saw it progressive, like first it started emotionally, mentally, and then it went physical. Is that a typical kind of cycle of events, or?
I mean, it's different for different people, but sometimes the alleged perpetrator, or the person who's obviously doing the domestic violence, can blame the victim and say that you provoked me. Mm. It's your behaviour or you're this or you're that that's provoking me.
Yeah, I was told that all the
time.
In
a sense, yeah. So they're not accepting. And at a time like that, you can't get through to them. There's nothing you can say to change the way they're thinking or to stop them because they're not accepting what they've done. I think it really depends. I mean, depends on how the situation started off is how we look towards the end. I can't really, you know, there's so many different cases. I mean, there are some cases where, I can only speak on non-Muslim cases because a lot of my cases have been non-Muslim, where a girl who's come from abroad has married somebody here. She's had a child, which she was forced to have by this husband. So that's, in a sense, like you were saying about rape within a marriage, domestic violence. So she was forced to have this child. Mm. Once the child was there, in a sense, this man had more control over her. Yeah. If she went out or talked to anybody, he would say that you're provoking other men looking at you. And this is not even a Muslim family. This is a non-Muslim family. So that's the extent to which where they don't have hijab, and obviously we have. So if they're at that extent, you can just imagine the extent of a non-Muslim family. And obviously in that there's a child, so the child is also affected within this relationship.
So is it fair to say then that we find that it is a progressive amount of control? So first it's control almost emotionally, and then it's whatever it is they can do to kind of retain that control.
They feed off whatever's coming their way. So if they see that, you know, the victim is victimized, as it were, they feed off of that. They think it's okay. Well, if that's the norm and that's the way the person behaves, they can move a step further. So the more control they get, the more they go for.
Well, now, I mean, I've listened to both of you. And to me, this sounds like a really warped individual, whoever it is, be it your ex-husband, be it all these cases that you're going to talk about. Are these things psychological? Are they conditioned? What brings a person to a point where they think it's okay to take away the rights of someone else, to abuse someone else? You know, like, a point of justice is to treat people how you expect to be treated, yet this person has this, you know, hand of control over you. Is it psychological? Is it conditioned? Is it, Frizana?
I would say it's more... It's everything. Like I said to start with, it's cultural. So they look around to what's happening around them. So if it's acceptable, you know, you hear on the news or the neighbours doing it or whatever, they feed off of that, whatever's happening around them. Mm. They feed off of what they've seen when they were younger. So if it was acceptable because of some cultures where the men have grown up, like you said, wearing the trousers, they decide what happens in the house, they decide what the wife cooks. Mm. Whatever that child has seen while they're growing up, so that also is included in there.
Mm.
And then it's also how they think about themselves. If they are feeling low, if they're not feeling very confident within themselves, they will then make sure that they appear to be confident, they appear to be strong. So they feed off the victim to give them that strength, to make them feel better about themselves, in a sense. So it's a big combination, to be honest. I don't think it's fair to say you can point the finger at one particular thing that makes somebody do this.
Well, I used to get told that until I had kept quiet that the marriage was working. It's when I started speaking up against things that, you know, it was almost like, well, if you shut up and put up, everything is fine. And I was actually told that, well, you know, if you just didn't talk back or didn't say anything, we would have been fine. But obviously, how long can you stay quiet about something which is, you know, innately it's not right, and it's not, you know, I see the difference now. Alhamdulillah, I'm happily married and I see the difference in how I'm treated, and it's just phenomenal. You know, I can't believe that, you know, I put up with so much. And I think also sometimes what happens is that you react to certain things. So for example, perhaps someone else might be quite happy to put up with that abuse and, you know, put up with the shouting and the screaming, as long as they're getting a big house and, you know, getting the diamonds and pearls and the jewels and, you know, whatever. Maybe some women are quite happy to just plod along, it makes no difference. But me as a human being, it was like, well, no, you can't treat me like this. What's going on? I need to be respected, and, you know, I need to be spoken to in a civil manner, not to be shouted at over things which, you know, are just trivial. So I think it boils down to how a woman or a man, because men do also experience abuse. Some men have gone through domestic violence as well. So it just depends on how you reciprocate and how you react to that situation. It didn't work for me. It may work for somebody else. You know, they'll be quite happy to be in that kind of a situation as long as they're getting their, you know, luxuries of life, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, so. I mean, it almost sounds a little bit like, I mean, we're saying that the men can be conditioned and therefore, because they've seen what's going on around them, then they think it's actually, it's okay to do it. But then I also think that, I mean, you're saying some people are ready to accept it, but
yeah,
I think that sometimes, is it not also the fact that, I mean, looking at your case, from that person that came from abroad and that she had to come here, generally you find that a lot of people that kind of import their wives come from the Indo-Pak kind of like mentality. And because they're bringing a wife from abroad, I think it's more rife there, this kind of domestic violence, this, you know, I wear the trousers. In this country, I think maybe we're more equal.
I don't know. I think I disagree with that point. I think, you know, I've seen quite a few cases of people who are a non-Asian environment and they've, you know, domestic violence is prevalent. It could be because their husbands get drunk or they're on drugs, but it's there, it's prevalent. I don't think you can confine it to any particular country or area.
No, but what I'm saying is that if the man is conditioned by his surroundings to then think that it's okay to do this, is the woman then conditioned to sometimes accept it because that's all she's seen? Like, I'm not allowed
necessarily. True. I mean, like, for example, this lady came from abroad, so she's reliant on her husband. There's financial abuse as well here, if you think about it. To start with, financially, she's reliant on her husband. He's already got her secured there. Then slowly, she became pregnant. He's got her further secured. It's a very slow process.
Trapping her almost.
Yes. I mean, he may not have thought of this at the beginning when she first came down, but maybe she was so victimized herself.
Yeah.
In her personality, in a new country, you know, financially not being free. And he automatically kind of went into this circle because, I don't know, maybe he's seen it in his childhood. And it so happened. He may not have intentionally thought, I'm bringing it here, I'm going to, you know, wear the trousers. I think it just sometimes happens. But once you're in that cycle, it just keeps snowballing, really. Well, that's what I'm saying. If you don't accept that you're making those mistakes... If that person does not accept the mistakes they're making, how do you stop the situation?
Exactly.
Until somebody says, this is not done.
This is not on, this is not right, yeah.
Yeah, and can we say that maybe they're suffering from an inferiority complex and therefore they then need to have control on something?
I think it's a superiority complex, actually. I think they think they're just above everything and they need to...
because
I find
hidden underneath.
Maybe there is an inferiority complex underlying, but I almost felt as though it was if... I'm just too good for everything. Sort of arrogance, really. And therefore, I can exert my power and authority because I'm the man and you do as I say. And I can shout at you, I can scream at you, but I will be nice to you as well when I want to be nice to you. Literally, that's what it was.
It's control, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I feel I'm ready to be
it's
nice.
It's my, it's me.
Because
sort of
I will get what I want from this relationship when I want, so I'll be nice.
And if I'm not happy, it's your fault. It's so almost like that.
It's not a marriage of like two parties. It almost is a marriage of one party and what is his convenience. And
well, it is two parties because the other person is not obviously saying it's not acceptable. So this person thinks it is acceptable until there comes a point where the victim says it's not acceptable. I mean, there's also cases where families, the victim is not allowed to see the family as much. All ties are broken with family, all ties are broken with friends. That puts the victim in a position, they are isolated. So it can be isolation through family, it can be finances, it could be, you know, physical.
You know, the isolation point is really actually important because by doing that, what they do is they tend to take away your support network. So if you have the opportunity to talk to somebody about your problem, you don't realize that this is wrong. I found that I was discouraged to discuss any kind of issue. The first time I had the physical abuse experience, I was told not to take it to the higher level, not to take it to the parent level, and I was, you know, it's almost to pull you away from your support network. Because
was there an or else implication to that?
Not really. No, there wasn't an or else. It was just very sternly said, look, just forget it and drop it and just, you know, pretend it didn't happen almost. But I think it's to take you away from the people around you. Not to, well, no, maybe meet them, but not discuss the real issues with them.
Mm.
You know, you're not allowed to disclose. And the whole cultural thing of you're not allowed to talk about what goes on. Yeah, and also you're not allowed to talk about what's going on in your marital home with your... with your own paternal family, maternal family, so to speak, is considered to be a betrayal to your marital home. It's that cultural thing that, you know, you keep your problems in your house, you don't take them out.
That's a religious thing as well, is it not? That, in a sense,
you don't air your dirty laundry in public, but I don't think that means that you don't go to the right sources for... I mean, there's one thing about the grapevine, and then there's another thing about seeking, like, good advice, and that definitely is quite high up there on in Islam, that you do seek the right advice from the right people. I mean, where do you get counsel from otherwise? So it's been an interesting first half of discussions around this subject of domestic violence, and we will come back after a short break. So my viewers, thank you for joining us for this first half. I mean, we've been looking at domestic violence and how, you know, sometimes it is conditioned, sometimes it's psychological, sometimes it is in essence it is about having control, and there may be deeper rooting understandings as to why these things happen, but on the other side of it there is an acceptance of it, and we will come back after the break to look into this a little bit more. So do join me after the break. Welcome back to this week's show, where we are discussing domestic violence. Before the show, we were trying to understand the reasons as to why. We looked into my guest Yasmin's experiences with domestic violence, and we're going to jump right back into the show. And if I can ask you, Frizana, do we have any reasons or any kind of ways to alleviate the issues with the perpetrator? Is there anything that one can do? Is there anything that, or is it simply...
Like I said before, the alleged perpetrator may not always realise what they are doing. Sometimes they're caught up in this snowball or, you know, unless something happens to the victim that makes them suddenly think, like I said, either it's a case on TV that think, actually, you know what, I shouldn't be doing this.
Mm.
Or either somebody in a circle had talked about their issues and it empowered them. Until they get that level of empowerment, there's nothing, in a sense, that's going to stop the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator. It could even be the child. It could be a child that, you know, that is seeing this, and the mother suddenly realises, oh my God, my child is seeing this on a day-to-day basis. This is really not right, you know, and I'm seeing something in my child that I don't like. I've got to do this for the sake of my child. I've got to come out of this situation. Once that happens, once there's that breakthrough from this kind of, it's like a tight container, really.
Mm.
Once that container is opened, ever so slightly, once it's opened, is when support systems can go into place and we can then start. Until then, I don't think the alleged perpetrator is ever going to realise what they're doing.
So, Merv, if I can ask you, how did you deal with it, you know, both in managing yourself as well as maybe potentially the desire to change your husband, as well as, I mean, you had a daughter in the relationship too, so it kind of like, it's like threefold. You're trying to manage yourself, you're trying to maybe show him the error of his ways, and try and manage having a daughter that has to have faith in her, in her father, as well as, you know, showing her that actually what happened was wrong.
I think with me, what happened was that I tried verbally to speak to him first and make him understand that, you know, I don't like this. This is what upsets me. Because obviously you've got to remember, when I first started off in the marriage, I was very pragmatic. I was very secure, confident. You know, I knew what was right and wrong, and I knew what should be and shouldn't be. So I sat down and I said to him that, you know, I don't like the way you speak to me. I don't like you shouting at me. I don't like you telling me off in public. I don't want you to always have a go at me about little things. I don't think he understood. It was almost like I was talking to a brick wall. And I think he just thought, what are you on about? So it was quite difficult. And then I kept trying and I kept saying, look, I don't like this and I don't like that because of this reason. You know, it wasn't like, oh, you're this and you're that. It was always like, I don't like you doing this because of X, Y, Z.
Mm.
And it was a struggle. It was a real struggle trying to make this person understand. But then there were moments when he would be really lovely, and it was like, oh wow, fantastic, I finally got through and hopefully everything will be okay. And then I remember my daughter used to get really happy as well when she used to see everything was fine and there was peace and there was, you know, harmony in the home.
Yeah.
Or if he actually went and bought me something, or he was considerate, he made me a cup of tea, or, you know, said, he did always compliment me when I made something nice to eat. You know, I can't fault him on that. You know, he did appreciate it. He did appreciate the fact that I looked after his family and parents and everything. But, you know, you need that private respect as well. It's all very good. So it was very difficult. It was like, on one hand, I was like, yeah, you're great, you're wonderful. But then on the other hand, it was like, that was contradicting. So I was really confused in my head. I didn't know where I stood. I was like, well, are you happy or are you not happy? Okay, you appreciate it, but then why are your actions then saying otherwise? And he'd be like, well, I've just got a bad temper, you have to learn to live with it. But, you know, it impacted my daughter because she was starting to get scared. And, you know, and I remember he sometimes on the odd occasion would shout at her for her homework and everything. And, you know, little children, when they're 4 or 5, they start trembling because they're being shouted at, because, you know, she's 4 or 5, you know, she's not Einstein yet. You've got to teach children properly. So if she got something wrong in her homework, it would be like, you know, why haven't you done it? So there was a lot going on, and hence why it took me 10 years to actually, you know...
But it's like what I said about the sealed container, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something made you break through.
Well, it was my mum, bless her. You know, I called her out eventually, and she said, got to get you out of here, you know. And she made me realise that, you know, no, it's not right for me to be here, and forget about what other people think, forget about society. And, you know, life can go on after this, because I thought life, that, you know, my life could not continue if I'd actually managed to get out of it. I didn't want to get out of it because I didn't want to end something that I thought was meant to be forever.
Yeah.
That's the way we're taught culturally, isn't it?
Yeah, this is where culture plays a big role in it. You shouldn't get divorced. And I remember, like, a generation above us, there was a lady who said that she had she was going through domestic violence for so long, and it wasn't until she was like, all right, I can't do this, so either, you know, my body bag leaves the house or you get me out. And it was quite sad because everyone was like, no, but you're going to be divorced. And I'm just like,
well, it is the most detested thing in Islam. They say the arsh, you know, actually physically moves, and it's understandable because, you know, it is painful. It is hard. It's very difficult. It's not nice.
It is not just yourself. It's the family. It's the children.
Yeah.
It's everybody involved.
My daughter. You know. No one can ever replace her father.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Mm.
No matter what he is or isn't, he's still her father, and he will always love her, and she will always love him, knowing what he's like. This is how the law is of nature. That, you know, he's connected to her. So. It's very difficult to do something like that. And, you know, you need a lot of emotional strength. You need a lot of willpower to be able to think you're doing the right thing, because you know you've tried everything else.
Yeah.
And when you get to that point where you think, it's either me or my funeral.
Yeah.
Then you know, okay, I need to get out of this situation. And it's not easy.
Yeah. So, Frizana, as a social worker, the question I want to ask is, and it's just an outward thought, is the assistance that you offer, does it encourage separation, or is there a point where you first go in and go, maybe you need to try counselling, or maybe you need to try and, you know, alleviate the underlying issues towards this domestic violence?
I mean, it's kind of victim-led, to be honest. It depends on the safety of the victim and anybody else involved, if there's children. First point would be to safeguard whoever the vulnerable person is, which is the victim, child. If there are elderly parents or anything else, to make sure that they're safeguarded and they're safe. If that means that they can stay in the house and whoever the perpetrator is has to leave the house, if that's a possibility, there's always issues, sometimes they can't, then that's what we do. Otherwise, we arrange a hostel or something if we need to get the victim and the family out. And once that's done, once they're in safe places, I mean, sometimes it goes down the court route, sometimes not. But obviously we do an assessment to see, you know, whether, if there's a child involved, whether the alleged perpetrator is okay to see the child. Is it safe for them to see the child? And maybe assess them with the child, and that's a good way of seeing, you know, anger and all of those things. We can offer counselling. So it's not necessarily to split up the family. We do try and obviously work to
keep
them together as much as we can. It really depends on the situation, how much the person is willing to change, how much they've realised what they've done wrong.
Yeah.
But we go with the victim and what the victim is obviously saying.
And so therefore, I think you just, it's risk assessed then,
definitely,
at every stage.
Yeah.
And I mean, Mev, you said that, you know, 10 years it took you. Mm. Did you risk assess it and then go, right, that's it? You know,
I think I was always mentally assessing it in my head anyway, from the day I got engaged, to be quite honest with you. But I just didn't want to face the reality of the situation. Obviously, as a social worker, you're very pragmatic in your approach, and you can see when you're out of the situation, you can dispense the advice. But when you're in it, I mean, I can speak from a person who is actually in the situation, your judgment is clouded.
Yeah.
Well, there's no emotion.
No.
I mean, I would be thinking with my head and doing what I would do, whereas you would be thinking with your emotions, and that's, and it's not just emotion, it's like culture, it's religion, it's what would the family say.
There's a hundred things.
There's so many things that would, like you say, cloud your judgment.
Yeah.
So you can't think of it. And this is why the victim is victimised further by taking away family, friends and other social, because they're usually the ones that try to take away all this cloud, don't they?
Yeah.
They're put in a situation where, who's going to help you now?
Yeah, like your family would be the first ones to point out, well, that's not right.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you would listen and you'd understand and you'd gain strength from that support.
Mm. Sometimes they don't even know.
So, don't know. Well, you know, like my mother, she didn't know until the very last minute. It was a shock for her. And, you know, she was like, well, why didn't you say anything before? And I was like, well, because I didn't want to trouble anybody. And I didn't want to, I don't know why I didn't. I think I just was always told to keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are, it's something which is it's prevalent, it's there, but to deal with the situation, you know, again, when you're in the situation, it's very difficult to understand.
So we've heard your husband about how it affected your daughter. Frizana, how do we see, I mean, is nightmares is that generally what happens with children, or are there any other ways that they deal with the fact that domestic violence is happening?
I've had cases where I've been called into a school because a child is drawing pictures that are violent. For example, SpongeBob SquarePants with lots of blood, which is not a norm to see. Sometimes sexually, pictures that are just, you know, robots and things, that it's just not acceptable for us to take in, and this is young children. And so I had been called in on a couple of occasions to go and assess these pictures, speak to the child, and it takes a long time. It's not something the child's not going to open up. They've been told not to speak, or they've been made to feel that they're bad, even though they've got nothing to do with the issue. And it can take a very long time to get through whatever's going on in their head. And it's a matter of slowly trying to find out why they're drawing these pictures, or why are they going up and punching somebody in the school playground. Or so it can be detected in so many different ways. And I think what we're lucky about here is that the teachers in school are very well trained in child protection and very aware of signs to look forward to. You know, if suddenly a child that's very energetic is suddenly really withdrawn, why are they withdrawn? You know, or when they go home with a certain person, why don't they look as happy as when they go home with the other parent or the grandmother? Or I mean, there's so many signs to look out for. And I think we've got a system now, which is really good, that does look out for signs for children. But who is there for the victim?
Yeah.
For the mother or the father, whoever it is that's the victim in the relationship. Who is there to look out for the signs there? I mean, we don't go to school. Nobody's going to notice at work. And we mask it well as well, whereas children are so innocent, they're unable to mask.
So we're looking at children. You kind of pick up the signs, be it through play, through drawing, through going home with X, Y, or Z. Do you feel, and I'll come to you, Yasmin, first, do you feel that enough is being done by the community to try and spot the signs and then offer the support, or are we dependent on secular systems too much?
Gosh, that's a very good question, actually. Community could mean what? You mean like your local mosque, or you mean like sort of
mosque,
family?
Even families.
Well, I think family are usually the first to realise that something's wrong.
But I mean, your family, if you're being told that you can't discuss it with your family, and then and you're kind of like trying to lead a normal, a so-called normal life to the outward world so that nobody knows what's happening inside. So generally, even though your family would pick up on it if you were allowed to say things, then maybe, like, I mean, in the same way that Frizana was saying that we pick up on drawings, we pick up on their attitude, do you think the community should maybe be looking at, you know, are there any signs? Has she stopped being as, you know, extrovert as she used to be? Or
with me, I mean, I can go by my example. What happened was that I started to look quite gaunt and withdrawn, and sort of, although when I'm usually depressed, I eat, but actually it stopped eating, which is also a bit strange. But I think it was just the internal stress. And people had started saying to my mum that, is she happy? Because she doesn't look 100%. She doesn't look like the old, well, you know, the girl we knew before. And my daughter started playing up a bit as well. So she became really withdrawn and very quiet. She was very clingy to me. She never wanted to leave me. She always felt like she had to protect me. You know, it was almost as if, like, if anyone spoke to me, even if they were my friends, she didn't want me talking to my friends. It was, she just felt, I saw in her behaviour that she was very clingy towards me, and almost, I felt that she, I could, like most kids, I would see that their parents could leave them on their own and they would just get on with their colouring. But with my daughter, she wouldn't want to leave me for a second.
But would you make excuses for that in front of others to try and mask it?
Yeah, all the time, of course. I was like, no, everything's fine, everything's fine. You know, and it's like, you know, I remember often crying and then and turning up at a birthday party trying to be all happy. And my best friend, who happens to be my cousin, she saw through it straight away. She said, what's wrong? I was like, nothing. She goes, no, there's something wrong. You're not telling me. You know, and I kept saying, no, it's fine, it's fine. Then, you know, she let it go. But she knew, and she told me later on that I knew that there was something very wrong, because, you know, I could tell by your face that you were hiding things, you were pretending. So sometimes you community or your family or even people at the mosque or whatever may see it, but
they're worried they to rock the boat, in a sense, aren't they?
And they can't, but they can't do anything until you're willing to talk about it, right? What can they do? You know, it's like with my daughter, when I was trying to counsel her through everything, I had to talk to her and get it out of her. She didn't come to me, because
sees it as the norm, maybe.
But also, sometimes as an adult as well, you don't know what your emotions are.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure it all out. So I think she was trying to do the same. It's very complex. It's very sad. It's something that you just think, wish nobody would have to go through it, because it's not nice. Because I always say physical affliction can heal, but emotional affliction takes a long time to heal, if it heals.
So, I mean, you're a social worker. Do you think more can be done in our community?
I think they are starting to wake up to the fact that there is more that needs to be done. I know some local communities are now starting to look at safeguarding in general, starting to look at putting in policies and procedures in place to make sure that children and adults who are vulnerable within the community are protected within the community while they're at community settings. We haven't gone as far as obviously moving out of the community itself, the community building, and whatever happens outside the community building. But if information had come, I do feel confident that it can be dealt with within the community, and people can help. The problem is a stigma attached. The problem is that people aren't going to come out, even if it is observed or seen by somebody in the community. You're going to mask it because there's a stigma, there's a name, you know. Who's going to believe me? And it's that masking that you're saying, that masking that's going to stop any kind of disclosure coming out. This is the issue. I think people are now starting to be more educated, but until, like you said, it's victim-led, it's still victim-led at the end of the day.
If I can add, I mean, there are obviously certain telltale signs. If you've been in a normal relationship, which I am now, I have a lovely husband and, you know, he's very respectful. You can see what's abnormal. So as an outsider, a family member or community member, if you yourself are in a happy marriage and you know what normal is, then you can see that your friend or your sister or whoever it is going through something which isn't quite right. So then maybe, you know, you need to point that out to them and say to them, listen, this is how it should be, but this is how it is. That's what I can see. And perhaps, you know, then you can help that person. You know, there are some very basic things that husband and wife should have. One is you speak to each other in a respectful manner. The second is that just because your wife is married into your family does not mean she stops meeting her family.
Yeah.
You know, your mother who gave birth to you, she has a right over you till the day you die. You don't sell your daughter to another family.
No, yeah, definitely.
Yes, you give the dowry and the hak and mahar, but it does not mean that, you know, suddenly she emotionally cannot love her family anymore. You know, those friends who are there for her, people who have been with you through through your bad times, you can't just disown them and forget them because you're married. But then, you know, the respect is mutual. Yeah. She should be allowed to see her family, and you do your bit for his family.
Yeah.
You know, that has to, and then obviously there are certain things like, you know, you support your wife if she needs you, and the wife supports the husband. So these are like really basic fundamental things which should be there in the marriage, which you don't know unless you've got a normal marriage.
I mean, if I can go back to what you're saying about allowing to see the family, I don't think it's always the case. I mean, sometimes you can have some partners that are very clever in how they do things, and what they may do is keep the wife engaged in endless things. That's another level of control. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? Join the community. Let's do this. Let's do that. So that person never has time. So they don't even know that the husband is actually stopping them and breaking all their ties by keeping them engaged. It depends on how well the person is clued up on what they're doing themselves to the victim. And so obviously their ties are broken because they're so engrossed in the other activities that the husband is saying, let's do this together, let's do that. It's kind of ownership. Let's do all this.
Well, I mean, Alhamdulillah, it's been an interesting debate today. I thank you both for your contributions. Alhamdulillah, your sister Yasmin is happily married now, and has managed to take herself out of that relationship. To my viewers, I hope you have enjoyed today's show. We have been talking about domestic violence, and I think that the end, you're only going to be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel once you accept that what you yourself are doing, if you're the perpetrator, is actually wrong. I think in any relationship, everyone needs to be mindful of the rights of the other person in the relationship, as well as the rights that you have to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I do thank you for joining us today. Do join us on our next show. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.